This episode of the Children's Literature Podcast is brought to you by Halloween Costume Negotiations. Halloween Costume Negotiations. We already bought the Princess Peach outfit. It's too late to also dress up as Mario. Welcome to the Children's Literature Podcast. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. This episode is about Yanagita Kunio. It's crazy to think that folklore had to be saved from extinction, but it did. For all of human history, until the Industrial Revolution, folklore was as much a part of daily life as eating, drinking, and sleeping. Local legends about trees, mountains, and streams would be retold as people walked past these features. Tales of the great deeds of one's ancestors could be told around the fires of nomadic tribes, in Viking mead halls, and in no theater productions in medieval Japan. But the thing about folklore is that it can only exist while there's a folk, a group of people with a shared heritage in their traditional homeland. When the world began to industrialize in the 18th and 19th centuries, there was an unprecedented movement of people from villages to cities. Humanity's standard of living leaped forward, and technological progression accelerated. But there was a cost. Traditional ways of life were uprooted and, in some ways, lost forever. It had been natural for human beings to stay rooted in one place, surrounded by generations of extended family. People were used to being deeply connected to their homes, and this created a cultural memory as stories were repeated and shared. As young people left the villages their ancestors had lived in for centuries, these stories and traditions began to be lost. I talked about some of these issues way back in episode 7, which was called How the Brothers Grimm Saved Folk Culture. Today, I'd like to talk about another writer who helped to save folk culture, Yanagita Kunio, the father of Japanese folklore. Yanagita isn't much known in the West, and I think that ought to change, as he was a remarkable man whose work helped to legitimize the idea of folklore as a subject for serious study. He also preserved stories that have gone on to inspire countless works of literature, art, and film today. As a note, I refer to him in this episode the way he would have said his own name. Sometimes in English language publications, they'll write his name as Kunio Yanagita. But in Japan, surnames are given first. Yanagita was his family name, and Kunio his given name. But this wasn't the case when he was born. Matsuoka Kunio was born in 1875 in Fukusaki, a town in the south of Japan about halfway between Osaka and Okayama. He was the fourth of seven sons and had at least one sister. Despite having so many children, the Matsuoka family was able to send him to Tokyo Imperial University to study law. He graduated in 1900 and got a job with the Ministry of Commerce and Agriculture. Kunio would change his name when he got engaged to Yanagita Ko, the daughter of Yanagita Naohei, a justice on the Supreme Court. In 19th century Japan, sons inherited family property. So when a family had no sons, as was the case with the Yanagitas, they would choose a new son from another family, and he would usually marry one of the daughters. The new son would take on his wife's family name, allowing money and property to be inherited in the family. So Matsuoka Kunio became Yanagita Kunio. Yanagita traveled all over Japan as part of his job in the Ministry of Commerce and Agriculture, and he could see how farmers struggled with outdated tools and farming techniques. He also worried about the fact that their children had almost no chances to be educated. Even though Yanagita was a university graduate with a fancy government job who had married into the upper crust, he had the gift of being able to connect with just about anyone. On his travels on behalf of the government, he would sit down in the humblest of homes, listening carefully to the concerns, ideas, and stories of ordinary people. He took careful notes and recorded observations that most bureaucrats would have considered to be insignificant. Yanagita was a prolific writer, coming up with ideas that would have a huge impact on the developing fields of folklore studies, ethnology, anthropology, and linguistics. His best-known work was Tono Monogatari, published in 1912. The title translates to Legends of Tono. Tono is a small village in the north of Japan's main island of Honshu, but the kanji characters used to write the word Tono mean far and field. So it's interesting that the literal translation of Tono Monogatari is Legends from Far Afield. And they really were. These were ancient stories that had very little to do with the cosmopolitan life of the capital. In the book are bits of folklore, local legends, and traditional practices. Many tales of yokai, or supernatural spirits, are preserved in this book. Another of Yanagita's influential works was Momotaro no Tanjo, or The Birth of Momotaro. This book examines how a folktale about a character named Momotaro, or Peach Boy, both reflected and influenced Japanese culture. Yanagita's interests were boundless. He wrote about the language and practices of hunters in the remote wilds of Miyazaki Prefecture. He even wrote a book about Okinawa, showing unusual interest in a very remote area of the country that had a minority culture, dialect, and religion. Through history, Okinawa had mostly not even been part of the Japanese nation. So it's interesting that Yanagita still considered it a worthy subject of study. Yanagita's work in folklore was strongly motivated by his belief that common people mattered, and that governments should serve all citizens, not just wealthy, powerful rulers. He believed that history focused too much on upper-class people, and that society would be better served if academics and members of the government put the lives and concerns of ordinary citizens at the heart of their work. I think it's interesting that the Brothers Grimm and Yanagita Kunio have quite a lot in common. Both came from modest family backgrounds, but they did well in their careers due to hard work and improving their natural talents. All three had government jobs that allowed them not just to travel, but also to observe society from a broader point of view. They could see the rapid ways their countries were changing and wanted to do what they could to make sure that the important parts of the past were not lost. They were also interested in linguistics. Grimm's Law, named for Jacob Grimm, describes how consonants behave as Indo-European languages change over time. Yanagita Kunio did similar research, writing in his book Kagyuko about how new words radiated out from influential population centers. There's something reassuring about the fact that Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm could be born in the 18th century in Germany, and Yanagita Kunio could be born 100 years later in Japan, and yet they shared a common human curiosity about how people communicate with one another and the stories they tell. They wanted to do whatever they could to preserve the traditions of the past, and they valued the voices and experiences of ordinary people. This stuff can seem really hoity-toity and academic at first glance, but the work done by early folklorists like Yanagita Kunio are the reason we have any folk tales left to tell. European literature would have been permanently poorer if the Brothers Grimm hadn't written down stories like Snow White, and Japan has similarly benefited from the preservation of tales like Momotaro. I'd like to follow up soon with some episodes on the stories preserved by Yanagita. And if any of you listeners have familiarity with his work, please let me know which ones you'd like to hear about. I look forward to discovering stories that are ancient to Japan, but new to me. I think that it's in folk tales that it's easiest to find common humanity in groups of people from very different cultures and historical periods. For example, I'm curious to dive into the tale of Momotaro, which reminds me a lot of the story of Thumbelina. Both involve an old, childless woman discovering a small child inside a plant. The child then goes on to have fantastic adventures, fighting off dangerous foes and befriending animals on the way. Both end up powerful and happy in the end, safe from danger and living as someone of great importance. Yanagito Kunio's work not only launched the field of folklore in Japan, but conscientiously preserved the traditions of ordinary people so they could be handed down as heirlooms to future generations. His influence can't be overstated when it comes to the ideas that are seen in Japanese literature, television, film, and artwork. Those ideas have then gone on to influence works produced in other countries. If you've ever marveled at the fantastic world of yokai depicted in the film Spirited Away, or appreciated how your favorite manga focuses on the life and concerns of ordinary teenagers, you've got Yanagita Kunio to give quite a lot of thanks to. I look forward to discovering more of his work, and I hope you do too. You've been listening to the Children's Literature Podcast. Please subscribe and give the show a rating. Send comments to letters@childrensliteraturepodcast.com. I'm your host, TQ Townsend. Thanks for listening.